Hello and welcome to the IAA Mobility Visionary Club. I'm Sarah Harmon. I'm so excited to be your host today as we talk with tech leaders and mobility pioneers who are shaping our world. Hard to believe, but today is our final episode of the year. We've got a very special speaker for this, our sixth episode. Albert Vass is a partner at BCG based in Munich. He leads the group's automotive and mobility sector in Europe, the Middle East, South America, and Africa. And today, Albert is going to be talking to us about the future of the European automotive industry. Albert, over to you.
Sarah, thanks a lot for having me. I think it's a very important topic we choose for today's discussion. And let me put out a couple of facts maybe before we start also with the Q&A, right? The automotive industry is one of the most important industries we are having, not only in Germany, but also in Europe. We see roughly 1 million people being employed in the auto industry in Germany, 4 million roughly in Europe. If you, let's say, look at the close of the core industry, it's up to 12 million if you include all the services and so on. So it's a very important industry which contributes a lot to our welfare here in Germany and Europe. And that industry is facing a lot of headwinds currently, right? So we see an economic slowdown, which obviously is translating also in people buying less new cars, spending a little bit less. We see, let's say, global trade risks and frictions, import tariffs, which are basically in the newspapers and in the discussion almost on a daily basis between China and Europe, but also now with the new Trump administration. The US is increasingly in the focus. We see huge technological shifts, right? So from combustion engine cars to electric cars on the one hand side, but also software, which we are seeing more and more in the cars, software-defined cars, autonomous driving, driver assistance systems. So all those changes put, let's say, lots of headwinds to the industry, lots of challenges. And at the same time, it's a very important one. So I think discussing what the future holds for that industry, but also what it would take really to shape that industry, especially in Germany, in Europe, in comparison to what we are currently seeing in China and in the US, I think is one of the most important topics. So very happy to be here and looking forward to the questions.
Well, we're really happy to have you, and it could not be more timely. If you open a newspaper, if you turn on the TV, this topic is absolutely everywhere. So let's get right to it, Albert. We're going to put some of our viewer questions to you in just a minute, but maybe let's start with a couple questions from me. We're seeing a slowdown of EV sales in Europe. Automakers are facing increasing cost pressure. What strategy should European automakers adopt to accelerate the transition towards electrification while maintaining profitability?
I think that's a question probably every OEM is asking himself currently. So obviously there is no easy answer. And I think the right strategy is a combination, because in times where there is a high uncertainty, and we see that currently on the consumer preferences, right? It's still unclear to what extent consumers are really willing to transition. Obviously, there's always a first wave of adopters, and there is a second, a third, and so on. So high, let's say, uncertainty on the consumer side. We also see increasing discussions on the regulatory side. So will the European Union stick to CO2 fines, for example, for 2025? How will the Eagle framework evolve up to the, let's say, core discussion? Will there be an ICE ban in 2035 as it's currently, let's say, planned, or will there be a certain adoption? So I think in those times where uncertainty is high, it's obviously not easy to define, let's say, a clear strategy. And I would always say flexibility as a more important value than ever. And we also see those OEMs who are currently able to manufacture quite flexibly electric cars as well as combustion engine cars, who are developing them on the same technological platform, currently have an advantage. And many others are thinking in that direction. So how can we, on the one hand, let's say, push the technological advancement of electric cars, make them even more attractive, makes them a bit more, let's say, cost efficient, new battery technology, and so on the one hand side. But at the other side also, how can we prolong ICE cars? How can we enable them for the next tailpipe emission standards? How can we ensure we have that kind of flexibility in our production system to shift very quickly from electric to combustion engine cars or the other way around. So those are at least the most important questions. Now, obviously, every OEM has a little bit of different starting base, right? But I believe also strategies, they will have some cost elements. So material cost optimization, the cars need to get even more attractive in terms of the features. So it's not only range and charging speed on the electric side, but also the combination on next level of infotainment systems. And then finding the right balance between pushing the EVs, but also not losing, let's say, the ICE revenues you're doing with those kind of cars.
So you've talked us through some of the technological and material solutions, and it's not either or, electric, ICE, it's both. Let's talk for a second now, Albert, about the political side of this. How do you see political decisions shaping the future of the automotive industry? And I'm thinking here particularly in light of geopolitical tensions between the US and China, as well as evolving regulations in Europe.
I think the point we just discussed is a perfect example, right? The industry really needs, or let's say the industry thrives if they have planning security, right? No matter in which direction, but you need planning security because planning cycles are very long, right? Unfortunately, at least in the Western world, it still, you know, takes 4 to 5 years to develop a car. If we talk about platforms, even a little bit longer. Let's say having a stable regulatory framework is key, and currently we do not have it. Now, at the same time, we do not have, let's say, a fair level playing ground, right? Because in China, we are seeing huge subsidies for the automotive industry, as we are doing in the US with an Inflation Reduction Act. There are lots of incentives, especially also for the automotive industry, for battery manufacturing. And we see more and more manufacturing capacity also being allocated to the US. So new plants are being built there and not in Europe. And now on top of that, we are seeing global trade tensions, import tariffs. I'm not a big fan of import tariffs. In the end, they're always masking inefficiencies in the market. They will only lead to cars getting more expensive, basically in all markets. If we are not importing Chinese cars without tariffs, then cars in Europe will get more expensive. The US will see exactly the same thing. And especially from a European point of view, there is a huge risk for retaliation, right? So, and our dependency currently on China for exporting cars from Germany to China, for producing European cars in China, is much higher than the other way around. I think there is a huge risk for us. And it's really up to the governments to find the right balance here and to provide the right framework for the industry to have those planning cycles, to have a little bit more stability, a little bit more security, to foster, again, because especially in Europe, it's more a downwards spiral currently, and we need to break out of it.
Yeah, Europe is vulnerable there. I'm wondering, Albert, how you're thinking about the competitiveness of Europe as a production location going forward, given these recent developments with Volkswagen announcing they're going to shut down several plants.
It depends a little bit, right? Because even within Europe, there are huge differences. So if you compare a manufacturing plant, let's say in Germany or France, with some Eastern European plants, for example, in Hungary, there's already a huge difference, maybe a factor 3 to 4, what it costs to manufacture a car, right? Now, if you compare, obviously, Germany to China, you probably will find the same factor. Yeah. So I think it's also a question, how do we find the right balance within Europe and how can we, let's say, support certain countries where we already have a very strong industrial situation and avoid that, let's say, all those plants, employments, and then subsequently also suppliers are moving to the East. I think that is one element of the discussion. On the global level, there's always an argument to produce cars close to where you want to sell them, right? If you think about costs, for sure, logistical costs, it's really an argument. Sea freight has gone up significantly, so it easily costs you 1,000 or 2,000 euros to ship a car from, let's say, Europe to China or to the US. And also sustainability, right? It's just not very sustainable to ship around all the parts and the finished cars around the world. So I think there is always a value in being close to where you want to sell them. And given, obviously, the regulatory framework, the discussion around tariffs, that will be even more so than ever before. Now, having said that, we still need to optimize our competitiveness in Europe, because when we look at the factor costs, be it labor rates, be it energy costs, for example, we are just not competitive as it is. And that needs to change. Yeah? And if that won't change, then obviously, especially if we talk about new OEMs or Chinese OEMs who want to localize, I mean, they will go to the countries where, you know, they have the best cost situation and are still close to the market.
Let's talk about Chinese companies for a second, because in recent years, we have seen Chinese firms who have ambitions to expand overseas beyond financial investments or playing an upstream role. We've seen this in the EV and battery sectors. What advice would you give to those corporations who want to establish leading roles globally and succeed outside of China?
So I think let's start the other way around. There are already quite some players who are, let's say, looking into expanding, into going into new markets, also in Europe, right? We already have various Chinese OEMs selling cars here. I would say what all of them have in common is they clearly underestimated the complexity of the European market, right? Because it's not one market, it's a sum of various individual countries with very different preferences, dealership structures, and so on. So I think what they really need to do is they need to invest in understanding those markets and understanding the consumers and understanding the dealership and also, let's say, a little bit the broader automotive ecosystem to fine-tune their go-to-market strategies. I think they need to rely on strong partners. I think they also need to rely on dealerships. It really has proven going directly into the market, if you have a brand which is not very well known, is very challenging and or very expensive. So I think they need to rely on those kind of partnerships and well-established setups as well. And then obviously the second step is localization, right? And I think there they can tap in a very rich supplier network in Europe. I think they need to optimize really for the manufacturing cost. So I would not advise them to, you know, buy existing plants, because obviously the plants OEMs want to sell are typically not the plants you want to buy, because they're not the best ones in the manufacturing networks. So I think there is rather a case for building up greenfield plants in the right locations where they get also subsidies, where they have a good, let's say, cost situation. And in the end, I think it's only a matter of time, right? So we will see it. And I think the discussion we should have in Europe is rather, how can we participate in that development? So think about the last two decades in China, where all the German OEMs have formed joint ventures with Chinese companies. Why don't we do it exactly the same way now, the other way around, and we participate in that development? Because no matter what, we won't be able to stop it. I think import tariffs and other regulatory elements, they will only delay it, but you will not be able to stop that development.
Hmm. Albert, I'm wondering, given the intense competition with Chinese players in the domestic Chinese market, do you think that European automakers are fully prepared to handle the pressures, especially when it comes to things like EV and digital innovation, where we've really seen Chinese companies establishing dominance? And what strategies can they pursue to strengthen their position in what is admittedly a challenging market?
Yeah, so there's a very clear answer, which is no. They're definitely not prepared, and that's the reality we're seeing currently in the market. So market shares are plummeting, especially on the EV side. Sales are very, very bad and going down. So I think when you look at the situation, I would say basically all the Western OEMs, they also have underestimated the speed in which Chinese OEMs have caught up, and not only caught up, but basically overtaken our industry here, right? Especially on electric cars, especially infotainment, but also ADAS, driver assistance systems. So the cars our OEMs are currently producing and trying to sell, they're just not competitive, not, let's say, on the feature side. And if you combine that with the price, it's a double no, right? Because they're typically significantly more expensive, up to double the price you would get, let's say, a quite comparable Chinese car. Yeah. Reality is also that basically no Chinese OEM is making money currently in the market. You only have BYD and Li Auto, which are having a positive EBIT margin. All the others are burning money quite significantly. But then again, it's part, let's say, of the Chinese strategy. They're being supported from the government. They're getting some subsidies. So there will be a consolidation, but that, say, competition is just not going away. Now, to get back to your question, what's now the right strategy and what to do about it? I guess there's one core discussion many OEMs are starting to have now. Will there be a future for, you know, European or international OEMs in China at all? Some most likely will answer the question with a no. And then the question is, how do you basically retract from China? How do you, you know, strengthen your position then in other geographies of the world, be in North America, be it other emerging markets, India, for example? That's maybe a bit a more extreme scenario, right? For the others, I think it's a question, how do you get to a competitive level? But that for sure will take, you know, a couple of years, right? And then the third question is, you know, how do you survive for the time in between, and what's the right strategy there? And there we see more and more of partnering with the Chinese. We see, you know, strategies of creating a sub-brand, which has a totally different price position, so much lower in the market. And I think those kind of strategies we will see more and more. I believe the whole automotive market in China is just being repositioned from a price point of view. So the whole market is seeing a downward shift with more substance in the cars. And I do not believe we will be able to develop those cars for the market in Europe. So you need to be much more in China, for China, with the right mindset, with the right supplier ecosystem, also with the right tech ecosystem. And those are the strategies which are currently being discussed, I would say, by all OEMs. The key question is really the speed of implementation, because there's not too much time. And that's where, let's say, partnership discussions are coming back in the place.
Yeah, let's talk about partnerships for a second. Do you think that there's sufficient alignment between the automotive industry and policymakers to ensure a smooth transition to green mobility goals? And where do you see room for improvement?
Definitely not, right? I would say the alignment can be optimized. I would argue that the United States is a good example for a strong industrial policy. I think the IRA is providing a good framework, which on the one hand side is supporting the green transition, but at the same time is really supporting the industries with, you know, incentives directly for the industries, with incentives for the consumer side. I think what we are trying to do in Europe is very challenging, because our government is creating a regulatory framework which is very ambitious on sustainability transition, but is a little bit ignoring the market realities in terms of, is a customer really willing to transition to an electric car? Is he willing to pay more for an electric car? How quickly are we building up a charging infrastructure, which is kind of a prerequisite for, you know, large-scale adoption of electric cars? Do we have a battery manufacturing industry and capability in Europe? And I think that disconnection between, you know, the ambition on the one hand side, but a little bit the market realities, that is creating a huge issue. And that issue is creating, let's say, a huge paycheck in the end for the automotive industry. And that's not going to be sustainable. And that will also lead to a decrease of the competitiveness we are having in Europe. And I think in the end, we as a society need to ask ourselves, is that what we want? Yeah? Do we want to diminish in the end one of the most important industries, whereas in all the other regions, we are seeing a great support for those industries? And finding, you know, that balance, I think there needs to be more alignment between the industry and our governments.
EV battery production and recycling is one of the challenges. What can the European automotive industry do to address that in terms of long-term sustainability?
I think it needs to be, again, a combination between the industry and the governments, because obviously building up battery cell manufacturing sites is very invest heavy. So we need subsidies in order to make that happen. I think reality is that individual OEMs have tried to do it and they have realized it's not so easy to form a business case. So I would argue we need, again, an industrial policy which needs to be supported by multiple OEMs. So think about joint ventures as one solution. I think there are already some cases in Europe, like ACC, where multiple OEMs have invested. So in the end, I think we need fewer. We need to focus the investments. We need a strong support from the government with subsidies. And then we need to push forward because we only have one chance. We currently see the very few battery cell manufacturers in Europe rather failing than succeeding. And I think also, let's say, from a security or supply security point of view, the question is, do we really want to create that strong dependency on other nations, especially China? Or to what extent do we want to have that critical technology in Europe and in Germany?
Yeah, it's a fair question. Let's look at this from the supply side for a second, Albert, because in the past, many suppliers grew their portfolios to become multi-component players and are now struggling with financial performance. What transformation is required for these players to remain competitive?
The suppliers are the most challenged element that they in the chain, because obviously with margins being or declining on the OEM side, the pressure is even higher on the supplier side. I think reality is we need to adjust to a new reality, right? Where car sales and also car production figures in Europe will never reach the peak we have seen before COVID again. So we need to face the requirement to restructure operations in Europe. And that's especially true for suppliers. So they need to adjust their operating models and reduce capacities, invest in capacities in North America, most likely. They need to get more efficient on the engineering side, on the R&D side, and they need to tackle the software side where many suppliers are still struggling. And now on top of that, there's also the transition from combustion engine cars to electric cars, with some suppliers obviously being heavily exposed to combustion engines. Then again, the question is, how do you ensure in that, you know, time of high uncertainty to find the right balance, yeah, not to over-invest in electrification, but also not to miss, let's say, that tipping point. So that's a crucial question where suppliers need to rebalance, I would say, their capacity plannings and their strategies going forward.
When we look at emerging technologies, things like automotive software and autonomous driving, it's mainly being driven by tech players in the US and China. Do you think that incumbent automotive companies and new tech entrants in Europe specifically are going to be able to take on those fields in the future?
In theory, I believe very strongly in the innovation power of our automotive industry. I think in the past, it was one of the most innovative industries. Now, for sure, I'm with you. I think we've lost a little bit our edge, and it's not an easy fix, yeah, because multiple players need to come together. I think it's the automotive OEMs, the suppliers who need to open up for collaboration also with startups, with research entities, and not only try, you know, to create those innovations in-house. And you know, there are a lot of, let's say, nitty-gritty process details, governance changes, which need to happen to, you know, improve the speed, improve the collaboration. But I think on, you know, a bigger picture, we also need to realize that the landscape in terms of available venture capital, the mindset of failing with innovation, it's not on the same level we have here in Europe if we compare it, for example, to the West Coast in the United States. And that's an element where we need to look at the universities, at the venture capital players, but also, again, at our governments to provide the right framework in order to thrive. So I would say, you know, the next couple of years, it's going to for sure be more around partnerships, which OEMs and suppliers will have with tech players, probably from the United States, to some extent from China, from Israel, and so on. But we also have our fair share of startups. I think we need to support them. We need to push them. And I don't see any reason why we cannot be as innovative as other geographies.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit more. How can European automotive ecosystem strengthen the collaborations between OEMs and startups specifically? What potential do you see there?
So I see a huge potential, yeah, because the industry is facing, you know, a current dynamic which is unseen. Yeah. So again, the powertrain transition, the software transition. So all those engineers they're still struggling a little bit with that, right? And like an OEM or also a supplier, it's not a speedboat. Yeah, we talk about huge organizations, grown processes, and so on. So they really have a need to join forces with those innovative startups. I think the biggest challenge is defining the processes, the governance, in order to, you know, integrate those small innovative startups in the big OEM or big supplier engine. And so, you know, one solution could be to really define certain entities, vehicles like accelerators, incubators, but really also to streamline processes in terms of how quickly can you onboard suppliers, which are, you know, small, innovative. How can you ensure direct connection to the engineers who are really working on exactly those kind of topics? So I think no radical elements, but they need to be done, and they need to be done, let's say, at scale to really make a difference.
So there's a lot of challenges, a lot of potential. Albert, as we come to the end of our time, I'm wondering, considering the challenges that are faced by OEMs and this slow transition toward direct sales models, how do you envision the future of automotive sales evolving in Europe?
Well, I'm always an optimist. So I think we have lots of innovation power. I'm confident with maybe the right government, we will define the framework we need for the industry to thrive. And then obviously the automotive industry has a huge impact. So it's not only employment, it's also our safety in mobility. It's the ease we move from A to B. It's really connecting people. And I think we need to come back to a situation where we are the most innovative geography in automotive, where we are developing the cars the world wants to buy, and where we bring the next generation of innovation to those kind of cars. And I'm confident that we learned our lesson. Now we need probably a couple of years to really turn the ship around. We need to bridge that. That's important. But then I'm a strong believer in our industry, and I'm sure we will find our way to be the number one in the world again.
All right. Well, you sound very optimistic. Thank you so much for being with us today. Albert Voss is a partner at BCG based in Munich. We appreciate your contribution as we dive into the future of the European automotive industry. Thanks, Albert.
Thanks for having me.
And that is all for this episode. We're going to take a little break for the holidays, and we will see you again in 2025 for episode 7. I can't wait. I'll see you then.